Passion, drive, and patience. The formula of winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything for you to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has it covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices that you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP it needs to be and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Again, ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to Clement Kush. Bubba gone this week. I wasn't going to do this by myself. I wasn't going to do this with anybody else. I said, give me a heavy hitter. So Bubba put me on a text message. Didn't have his phone number because he's that big of a star. Got Brent Hatley for me. We're doing Kush and Hatley. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me.
You know that I've been a fan of yours for a long time. All right, I want to bring that up just so you know. Yeah, I'm going to just need to mark out at the beginning.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. What's been going on, man? I didn't run into you at BARP. I just came back on the show a couple of months ago. I know you've been done with radio for a long time. I feel like when I was kind of working, I worked at this business right across or right next to Bubba, Bake More Pies, doing marketing. And like when you're kind of out of radio, it's like out of sight, out of mind. People are like, you must not exist if you're not on the radio, you know? And so I always tried to check in and let people know I actually was existing doing jobs. What are you up to, man? What are you doing with your day?
Well, I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
But it's not anything for the public consumption.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I am completely done. I look back on it fondly. I had a great time. It was 30 years of doing the same thing. So I'm done. I'm actually very happy with what I'm doing.
Okay.
So,
well, I didn't know. I don't know what you're up to.
No, like, I know. I know you don't.
All right. So I wasn't. Yeah. I don't know anything, Brent.
It's actually boring.
Is it? Okay.
It's actually boring. It's normal, everyday American life.
Okay. All right. Cool. And you're happy.
Oh my gosh. I've never been happier.
What did you hate the most about being involved with the radio show?
So when I first started in radio, it was 1993. So you had to write a letter to the radio station, or you had to, you know, call in, and we had to take your call. And interactions too were a lot in person. So you'd be at the car lot or at McDonald's
right.
on Saturday or at a bar on Thursday night. And that's how you kind of meet people. When you met people in person, the interactions were fantastic with people that were, fans, and the people that didn't like the show, basically they just had to like turn it off or had to talk about it amongst themselves.
Sure. Yeah. No tweeting back then, telling you suck.
No, and there was no getting. And think when I got into radio, there was no even internet, so you couldn't even get online and find out where somebody lives and all this other stuff. So, when it was like that, it was great. And even up until probably 2009, 2010, once social media started, that's when I started to not like it so much. And it's gotten to a point now. And I've talked to all walks of life of public figures. This isn't just Bubba or me or Howard or any of these people. It's, you know, I've talked to everybody. Everybody goes through it. It's just these extreme fans are too much. They're too much. I mean, and not those of you that are good, like those that you're excited and happy and good, like the people that you meet at BARP. And actually the Bubba fans are pretty good. The people that these days in the modern sense that have become quote unquote haters, they've just taken it way too far, and I've just got no interest.
Was it, because you mentioned the Bubba fans aren't so bad, was it the Stern fans that kind of wore you out?
Yes. And it's the Stern haters. And, you know, and I think kind of just like any politician or any radio host or any band almost, like the hardcore fans reflect that person. And they don't really understand Howard as a human being. They understand what they're hearing on the radio, and he's venting. And they take on that as their whole persona is his anger. And that's just the angry part of him. They don't know the whole human being.
Right.
He's a very layered, deep person. But you're hearing a lot of his venting on the air. That's his like almost like his therapy, because that's not the way he acts in real life. And these people take it and this is the way they act. So
and they haven't been able to figure it out over the years.
No.
That, you know, that's part of it. So what would you, I mean, was it, how bad was it with the Bubba fan? Like, how do you compare the Bubba fans and Stern fans? Are they? Can you not even compare them at all?
Not really. Okay. So Bubba fans are, for lack of a better term, they're more blue collar guys, and they've got a lot of shit going on. Like, they've got to like make money to pay the rent.
Yes.
And like support the kids and stuff. They their time that they can mess with you is limited. So yes, they did mess with me, but there was an end to it.
Yes, you're right. Like, good point.
A lot of these people have nothing but endless time. So it's fine. You know, they can, I'm done.
Are you off social?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I only have a personal, one little personal thing. It's a personal group on a social media platform where I, just have discussions with people I went to high school with. We all know each other in the real world. So those discussions are actually fun and productive. So.
Man, see, I love you. You're such a unique guy. Like, you know, it's tough to pull yourself away from that, but also to recognize that that stuff is not good for you at all. You know, they always say, I talked about this with Anna last week. People go, oh, you know, people fucking hate you. You must be doing your job. I'm like, why? I don't think that's the case. Like, why am I angering people that should be bothered by a guy talking on the radio? Why are we not looking at this guy who's fucking mad, who's sending me emails when he, you know, should be hanging out with his family or something?
Right. And I used to say to people, you know, I'm not elected to anything. You should be spending this much time on your mayor, on your city council, on your state senator, on your congressman. You know, the people that are making decisions on how much property taxes you're going to pay, that's what you should be mad at. And those people work for you. I'm here just entertaining you. I'm here to give you some escape from all of this. That's it.
Did you feel like, and this is, I'm kind of just projecting, I took a job at K-Rock in L.A. last year, went out there.
I know those guys.
Yeah. went out there. It was fucking horrible. And I came back, but I took the job. You know, I got out of radio with Bubba. I didn't want to do radio anymore, and I wanted to move on. I wanted to show that I could do other things, you know? It was all about, like, proving myself. And I did a couple other jobs, but whatever. Radio is my thing. They called me about it. So, I mean, if LA's fucking calling you, you know, you're going to go listen. So I felt like that was I made it in radio. Like, I got the call to LA. I love alternative music. K-Rock, yeah, legendary
K-Rock's
station.
K-Rock's a great station.
Yeah, I felt like that was the feather in my cap. I had been trying to work with Stern, tried to work with Jim Rohn, but I was like, you know what, K-Rock, feather in the hat, I made it in radio. Did you feel like that with Stern?
I kind of felt like that with Bubba when we got one station syndicated. I felt good, but I felt like that with Bubba on our first day on Sirius XM.
Oh, I bet.
So we were there on the first day as 1906, and, you know, Keith Olbermann's in the lobby, and CNN's broadcasting live, and MSNBC's there, and Fox News, and, you know, and you see Hannity walking by. It's like there's all these people are there and they're very excited, and we're going to be the afternoon show here. And I felt like, wow, I mean, like, I'm in the middle of New York City, and I felt like really I'd made it. And then, you know, later on that day, our show had been on for a couple of hours, and Tim Sabian comes, the program director of Howard 101, comes busting in that day. He's got the creator of The Simpsons with him. He's like, this is a great show. That made me feel like, wow, like, this is a guy who's in comedy. I knew who Sam, I was the only person in the studio, by the way, who knew who Sam Simon was on site. I was like, that's Sam Simon. He's like, they're like, oh, Sam Simon. I go, he created the show you might have heard of, The Simpsons.
And that's why you're always so good to have around, man, because you know those things that nobody else knows. So,
and he was in there, and I was like, wow, Sam Simon just gave us a compliment. And to me, that felt huge. A guy that was The Simpsons, Cheers, Taxi. I mean, just the when you're at his house, and I eventually got to stay at his house, like, jeez. Like, he's got an office with just the Emmys lined up on the wall. Like, it's, you're just like, that guy gives you a compliment on your comedy. That felt like I made it. And then when I got hired by the Stern Show, it was based on the work that I'd done with Bubba. Like, they were familiar with the work. And
that's how it happens, man. Yeah, people have to kind of know you. I know they always say you're going to get your next job from the person you know. I still sit on fucking LinkedIn and Indeed, but it's always through somebody. It's always through somebody, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing is it was a great, it was a lot of fun. And radio was a lot of fun. And it's just this landscape, you know, and Alex Stein was here for BARP, and he was like, hey, you need to do this. And I was like, but Alex, my heart's not in it. And, and he was like, I got good programming. He's not wrong. I love his bits. I think he is really talented.
He is.
Doing bits and being funny, super talented. But I was like, this is your turn. You do it. I don't want to do it. So,
Do you miss any of the creative? Like, do you miss the creative? Like, would you miss anything about it?
Yeah. Well, I miss, like, being able to take things, the thing that I love to do the most is being able to take a story in the news and tell you the parts that they're not telling you that changes the whole story.
Okay, that's what I was gonna say. Some people miss the camaraderie. Some people miss, you know, the crazy shit that you would do in the studio, all this stuff. But you missed the little parts of the story that the news was leaving out.
And then I could tell you that parts of the, you know, the parts of that story, and then it changes the whole story. So, you know, politics aside, but you know, back in 08, this is an example. Back in 08, you know, they're running. People might not remember, you know, the big attack on Barack Obama's. He went to this church in Chicago, and this reverend was anti-America, Reverend Wright.
Oh.
So I went and looked it up, and I went and looked up the whole clip. Well, it turned out Reverend Wright was quoting somebody else to make a point in that clip that they had cut out of it.
Oh, wow.
And secondly, Reverend Wright was a Marine and a U.S. Navy corpsman that treated President Johnson. So I was like, I don't think he hates America too much. I think he's just frustrated with the situation in Chicago, which anybody would be. And he was quoting someone else in a thing. So when you played the full clip, I was like, well, that gives it a completely different meaning and feeling.
Yeah. That's interesting. So that's the part. Do you still like to do that when you see news stories? Be like, hold on, this is what they're fucking leaving out.
Yeah. Like you talk about, you know, Rachel Maddow a couple of times has done an in-depth story on the Hulk Hogan sex tape, and she couches it as a First Amendment case, which it wasn't. It's a complete lie. The way she handles it is a complete lie, but it's to make her point, which is her point is Peter Thiel's an asshole. Well, I don't care about that. The courts don't care about that. She doesn't let her audience, because she talks about how Peter Thiel paid for it, but she doesn't let the audience know that that's not something that gets considered in court. So the audience is left thinking, because the average person doesn't know how the court system works, they're left thinking that if you pay for it, then that has something to do with the outcome of the case. Like the person with the more money is just going to come out the winner. It's just not the case. The court doesn't consider it. The jury doesn't know who pays the lawyers. Nobody knows that. But she makes that the centerpiece. It's being able to take stories like that and break it down and go, well, what she didn't tell you is this was a stolen tape and this was invasion of privacy. And it was a case about invasion of privacy. So, you don't get to correct stuff like that. So people have these, you know, and they talk about this border crisis that's going on, right? So there's an easy fix, a very easy fix to the border crisis.
I saw a video on Twitter where there's a bunch of truckers going down to the border. Is that the solution?
No, that is not the solution.
Okay, I thought it was good.
There's an easy solution, and any president can do it with one stroke of the pen. All you have to do is end the war on drugs. The war on drugs is causing this whole thing. We have the, people might not know, we had the DEA down in Mexico, in Central America, and they are the reason that these cartels have this power and this extreme violence is going on. It's our DEA is causing this. So these cartels are taking people's children and putting them into these gangs and into the violence. There's basically a three-way war in Mexico between cartels and I count the federales, the police, as one of the gangs.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a three-way war going on in Mexico with the DEA stoking it all. If we would end the war on drugs and bring what is our DEA doing in other countries? Get them out and get them back to the United States and let these countries do their own thing. Their economies would thrive. The violence would subside. And
they would stop coming over here.
They would stop. People are like, oh, they're sending their children to the border. Well, what would you do with your kids if you have a three-way war going on when your kid gets to about 10 or 11 is going to get taken to the Zetas cartel? Like, what are you going to do? Putting them on a train to the United States seems like a better option than that.
Right.
And that's where they are. And that would end if we would just end the drug war. This is an $85 billion war on our own people. Like,
but they've been losing every year it's been existence,
yeah,
right?
Like that old Bill Hicks bit that he does. He's like, there's a war on drugs, and drugs are winning.
Drugs are undefeated, man. Drugs never lose.
And with that in mind, the tool that we're using to, quote unquote, combat drugs the tool we're using to combat drugs is the wrong tool out of the tool belt. So in Portugal in 2001, people were like, oh, that's a small country. It's a Western democracy with millions of people living there. That's a pretty good sample size, if you know anything about sample size.
Man, you're so fucking smart, man. I know you got a lot of sports knowledge in there, too, man. Do you ever feel like your brain's just heavy from all the information you've stored over the years?
Yeah, I'm just interested. But it's, you know, in 2001, Portugal decriminalized all drugs. So they were having a crisis of overdoses, overdose deaths. I mean, just the, all kinds of societal problems. So they decriminalized all drugs because they were at just at that point. So that was in 2001, when we were 2024. So you got 23 years now of data. They are now last in Europe in drug overdoses. They are last in overdose deaths. But then it had a different ripple effect. Property crime went down. Gang violence went down. Teen pregnancy went down. Like, all of these positive societal things happened. And even the cost of living in Portugal went down. You can Google now, the cost of living in Portugal is so reasonable compared to the rest of the world, because they ended their drug war and they kicked these people out. They were like, no, we're done. And it also, there's a general stress that comes down off of you in society if you don't feel like, I'm going to go to jail for smoking a weed or snorting coke or whatever, doing whatever you want for whatever reason you want to do it for. If you don't feel like you're going to go to jail, it's just that general ease comes over society. And I think that what they did in Portugal should be an example for the rest of the world. But the problem is this, like, it's, like I said, in America, we spend $85 billion. You know, there's a prison guards union, which is that lobbies to keep more people in prison. Kind of fucked. There's, you know, the prosecutors have a lobbying arm. Prosecutors have a lobbying arm to what? To prosecute more people? For what? All of this goes into, you know, these private prisons. When they have a contract with your state or the federal government, they have to be 95% full. So to keep them 95% full, they have to arrest you for bullshit and put you in prison for bullshit. And, you know, I saw an interview with an old-time prison guard from Attica. He was all the way up until about 75, 76. He was a prison guard at Attica, which is a big max security prison in New York. And he said, you know, in the 50s, even the 60s, people would come to prison and they felt like they, you know, it was part of their job. Hey, I'm a bank robber. I deserve to be here. Or I did this. I deserve to be here. He said it was when people started getting put in prison in the 70s when Nixon came in for drugs.
Yeah.
When people started they felt like it was unfair.
And caged animals.
They didn't belong there for doing something to themselves, and they felt like it was unfair. And he said you could see the rise in prison violence as soon as they started putting people in prison and they didn't feel like they should be there.
Do you have, all right, now, do you have any serious political aspirations, or do you have any aspirations to, I know, like, poor example, but it's the only one I know of. Kim Kardashian was fighting for, you know, people to get out of jail early and all for, you know, I don't remember if it was weed or things that they faced. Like, it seems like.
It was drugs. She was a drug for drugs.
It was drugs, yeah. It seems like that's something that you not only have knowledge about, but you're passionate about. Is there a job or something that interests you in that arena, or just something that you're going to still just kind of pay attention to from the sidelines?
I would love to help, but it's just, it's futile. You're up against a lot of lobbying money, a lot of lobbying arms. And, you know, when you get to a guy that might consider ending the war on drugs, and I'll give you one on the right and one on the left. So one on the left would be Bernie. He would have ended the war on drugs. And the one on the right would have been Rand Paul. I mean, he even said when he was running for president against Trump, he said, I'll 100% end the war on drugs. And when you get those two guys, watch what happens to them. They just get treated as kooks and idiots. And they have the people with the right answers are the ones that are treated like they're crazy. That's what's frustrating about politics for me is, like, you know, you have to be on the red team or the blue team, and some of their assertions are just ridiculous on their face.
Well, like, I know, I thought of, you know, you legalize weed, people are just going to be smoking weed up and down the street, which is not really the case.
No.
So, but I don't know if they think that means you're going to legalize ecstasy and people are going to be rubbing each other in public, you know?
Like, if they legalized heroin, I wouldn't do it tomorrow.
Right, right. Right, if you're doing heroin, you're still going to do heroin.
Right.
As long as you can't walk into a 7-Eleven and buy heroin once you turn 21, you're good.
In Portugal, what they do is you can go to a doctor, they prescribe it, they give you the right amount, and a clean needle.
Wow.
And a place to do it.
Nice. I need to get my insurance and a little copay down in Portugal.
Yeah. So, well, for they have, quote unquote, socialized medicine, so you can go see the doctor, you can get your heroin, you can, but their society has gotten so much better. You know, think about the logical fallacy in this. You did drugs. We're going to make your life better by putting you in jail.
Yes. Yeah. How am I going to change?
That, like, doesn't even make sense. It's going to make you feel worse. It's going to make you, like, when you get out, you're going to be even more depressed. You're not going to be able to get a job. It doesn't help at all. It's pretzel logic. And the other example I give of pretzel logic and politics, and this is the perfect example of how insane we are. So you talk about the vaccine, right? Trump is the one that pushed the vaccine. Trump is the one that pushed the vaccine through.
Very hot button topic on the show, by the way.
It is. But hear me out. This is so weird. Trump pushed the vaccine through. But if you get the vaccine, that means that you are anti-Trump. And if you don't get the vaccine, that means you love Trump. But he's the one that pushed it through. And it's driving him crazy because he doesn't get credit. Like the thing.
It was called the Trump vaccine, wasn't it? Because yeah, didn't he have his initial.
Operation Warp Speed was his operation. And it's driving him nuts because he doesn't get credit for something that actually he actually did push it through. He and like anybody that got the vaccine and thinks the vaccine's the bomb diggity and all this other stuff. Trump is the one that pushed it through. He's the one that pushed everybody to get it done. And now if you get the vaccine, that means you don't like Trump.
Brett, they know I got I was here in 2020, you know, when everything, you know, really started hitting the fan and everything. And everybody calls me a snowflake pussy on the radio. I've never, you know, pledged my allegiance to anybody on the air. You know, I'll make jokes about anybody. But I got vaccinated like 4 years ago. And all of a sudden, yeah, I'm a fucking snowflake who loves Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, look, I just didn't want to die. I didn't get the booster. I haven't gotten anything since. It was just at that time. I felt like I needed to do that, you know?
Well, I got the vaccine because I needed it to go to the KISS concert that was coming because they were checking cards.
It was one of those deals?
It was one of those deals. And I was fine, and I got the first dose, and then I got COVID. It was the Delta variant. I got it so fucking bad.
Oh, man.
I got it so bad. And then Dr. Diaco, give him credit where credit's due. Dr. Diaco raised me from the dead.
He saved me.
He really did.
He is touted, as you know, Dr. Dan, not shy to tell anybody. Maybe his brother was being his hype man that day. Dr. Dan treated, like, I don't know, either 50 or 500, somewhere in between.
No, he's almost at 500 people that he saved. Like, he's got a concoction. He says, take it just like I tell you. And I mean, the first dose, 8 hours later, like, I was up and it felt better. It's starting to feel better. And 5 days later, I was negative and back at it. It completely obliterated it. It was pretty impressive, but I was in bad shape after that first shot.
Man, there's a whole lot of stuff here I want to talk to you about. So I want to write that down. All right. Something, like I said, I just came back to the show and, you know, I found out about Brandon the Quad and Caitlin and OnlyFans and I've been begging somebody for a password. You know, no one's given me the password.
Just give me your email. I'll send you.
No one will give me the password. Seriously, but no one will give me a password around here. Somebody, I think, had emailed me a couple clips, but I didn't watch. How did this whole thing come to be? I wasn't on the show when it happened. And what did you're in Caitlin's discussion about, you know, finally okaying to hook up with Brandon the Quad?
Well, a couple things. One, you know, we talked about swinging on the Stern Show, and when we started doing a Twitch show, people got a hold of her and said, you should do an OnlyFans, and she asked me, like, would you be upset if I did, like, nude pictures on OnlyFans? I'm like, no, I would, of course not. So she did it, and it's, like, blew up. So it turned into a business. One of the things she likes to do is kind of be a surrogate and help people out medically. And when I came to her and asked her about Brandon, I was like, you know, Brandon's a good dude. He's been calling the show since like 08 or 09, and he's never had sex. And she was like, psh, I'll hook him up. And she actually now, she likes Brandon's mom, and she's happy to be able to do that for him once a year.
Great family. I mean, love the family. He's got a great sense of humor. I saw him at Tate's Pizza that night. I think I saw him Thursday night. I shook his hand. He's like, oh, you don't want to shake that hand. I was like, you fucking pervert. I was like, don't do that shit with me. I walked out of there in disgust and sanitized immediately. So how did it go? How did it go this time? Are you, and you film it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So when did you learn how to do that? Was it just a skill you picked up? Did you study it? Like, when did you learn how to film? Because there's like an art form to it.
Yeah. Oh, true. Like, you know, shooting, like, I have a lot of experiences with cameras. I used to work at Home Shopping Network.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I used to drive the robotic cameras and run the robotic cameras because they don't pay five cameramen for five cameras. They pay one person to do five cameras.
Right.
So I did that for a couple of years. And so I've got a lot of, like, professional experience with cameras, and Bubba used to do a segment on Channel 10 and that I used to frame and all this kind of stuff. So, but you are right. Shooting and editing porn is a different thing altogether. That's, you know, I got really good at, and I am really good at Premiere Pro at this point, Adobe Premiere Pro video editing because of editing porn and shooting porn. It's very difficult. So it was a lot of trial and error. My very early stuff is not very good. but now her page looks fantastic.
And that's, you said that's a full-on business right now?
Yeah,
for her?
And she, you know, for a long time I was heavily involved in doing it, but she's kind of taking it over now, and she's got a team working with her, and she's off and running.
A team, all right.
Yeah, she's off and running. She's really got a good business going.
Man, that's I'm just jealous of that stuff. Having fun, you know, not having to go to some nine to five.
She puts in a lot of hours, more than you would at a normal job. See, the thing is,
where do the hours come in, Brent? Tell me, because so, I only see the fucking.
Yeah, exactly. So the shooting, that's, you know, probably 2-3 times a month, but the rest of it is you've got to do social media posts. You've got to post every day on OnlyFans. You've got to answer your OnlyFans. But she answers all her messages personally. So she, you know, does that, and you've got to. There's a lot of.
Like, you have to be there for the fans, or
my favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get when you're talking through Mint Mobile. I mean, I can't believe that I've been living some other life with all this scratchy mobile when I can get crystal clear and the best mobile through Mint Mobile. And I can do it all for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. I can afford this. How much have I been paying on my other plan? Probably getting gouged. But it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan. I mean, I'm talking jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Say goodbye to all that nonsense. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Or you'll lose them.
Yeah.
Or you'll lose them. She's there. She answers messages every day. I mean, and she, like, thinks about does her graphics and how she's going to edit the video and what she's going to put where. And she's got, you know, OnlyFans, Loyal Fans, Fansly, and Minivids. So she's got 4 adult sites plus all her social media she does. She's got a lot. She does a lot of work every day.
Was that ever the plan, or just turned into that?
It just kind of turned into that. And she's just got a mind for business. Like, she's a business person. Like, she did commercial real estate before this. So she's got a mind for business. And to her, it's a business, and she's really enjoying it and working hard at it, so it works well.
So I believe that the Brandon the Quad video is up on Caitlin. No,
this year's isn't up. So last year's is up on Bubba's OnlyFans.
Okay.
And the year before, I believe, is on Caitlin's.
But okay.
This year, we told Brandon we may or may not post it.
Okay. All right.
It's not up.
What was different about the second time around, either for you? I know you can't probably speak for Caitlin, but what was different for you the second time around?
The second time was because she's done 3 times. So the second time, we brought another girl and gave Brandon a threesome.
Oh, there was three? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so.
Oh, this year was supposed to be.
This year, there was supposed to be 3, but there was, you know, it's that time of the month for the other girl, so she couldn't make it. But Caitlin was great. She was fantastic. Brandon, he gets to have sex and have a good time, and everybody deserves that.
You feel good? You feel good about that?
Like, I do. I actually do. Yeah. Everybody deserves it. Brandon's a good guy, and like, he deserves.
I agree.
To have sex.
No, I agree 1,000%. All right, let me get your opinion, because I don't want to hold you here too long, because I really do appreciate you coming in. Quick hits real quick. Obviously, I know you're a Gators fan. Tell me your feelings on Nick Saban finally leaving Alabama, or does it not matter because Georgia is the king of the South now?
Well, I mean, it's trouble for Alabama, but it's been good for the Gators. The Gators have gotten, Alabama had a freshman 5-star corner who's now committed to Florida, who's coming to Florida. I think there's another player from Alabama, I believe a linebacker, coming. So Florida scooped up some of these Alabama players, so that's good for Florida. And I also think it's going to be good for football. I think, Alabama's dominance, and now with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, I think the SEC is going to be wild in a 12-team playoff. It's going to get wild. And I think Georgia's lost quite a few players to the portal, including a pretty high 5-star quarterback. So I think Georgia is going to come back down to earth as well. I think you're going to see, I hate to say this. I really hate to say this. I think you're going to see Ole Miss have a huge year.
Really? Yeah. Is that Lane Kiffin still?
Lane Kitten is, yes. he's the coach. And he's number one in the portal. He's got a huge recruiting class coming. Their problem this year was defense. They just didn't have any defense. Like, had they had any defense at all, they would have beat Alabama.
Do they still have Jackson Dart? Is he their QB?
Yeah. And then they've just cleaned up in the transfer portal, and they've cleaned up in recruiting. But he just needs a defense. He's got a great offensive system. He just needed a defense. Any kind of defense, they beat Alabama. Who knows how far they would have gotten if they would have had a defense. But I think Ole Miss is going to have a big year.
What do you think about the portal? Because I feel like
hate it.
Every aspect of it?
Not every aspect, but I here's what I hate about it. I hate the fact that young people 18 to 22 years old get to quit at the drop of a hat instead of working through it. Because, you know, I know that the military is different, but in the Marine Corps, I think the valuable thing that we learn is when you have to work through some tough things, sometimes it turns out better on the other side. And quitting doesn't serve you well as a human being. And I think that, like, the perfect example, and this has a little bit to do with a portal and a little bit to do with coaching and parenting, what FSU did, like, we didn't get selected for the playoffs, so we're going to cry and take our ball and go home and leave their brothers out to dry to get beat 63-3 on national television. That was not a good look. Like, I would never do that to one of my Marine Corps brothers. I don't care if they're one of them. I'm staying with him.
Are you talking about, like, the guys that sat out?
I'm opting out of the bowl game because we didn't get picked for the playoffs.
Oh, like Keon Coleman and Jared Verse and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, okay. We're going to cry and go home. Like, no. Come on, dude. Like, finish. Get across the finish line. I hate this culture of quitting because that is not going to serve them well at all as a human being. Like, sometimes sticking to it and working through things is where you grow as a human and become better.
And look, there are a lot of guys that will end up, you know, and you read about them all the time, that will stay, you know, somewhere at a college for 5 years, and then they don't play until that fifth year. But, you know, they're ready. Now you see there's a quarterback that goes somewhere. He finds out he's not going to play, and he goes somewhere else where he can play. And he's trying to get in a situation to where he can further himself. You know, do you still look at that as quitting, or do you look at that as someone just trying to look out for them?
It would depend on the situation, but a lot of times I think that you should, like, okay, you're not starting. Go compete. Get better.
Yeah.
Work on your game. Get your game better than that.
But you know what the thing is, though? Once a guy hits the portal, you know, like Cam Ward from Washington State, I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
Yeah,
he, at the end, he hits the portal, and then he's getting rewinded and dined by Rick Ross down in Miami. Florida State wants him. Everybody wants the guy. And then he goes, I'm going pro. Like, it's just like there's so many different things that you can do with the portal. But when certain guys go in the portal and they're big enough, it's like they're getting recruited all over again, except this time with money and with, you know, gifts and with all these certain things. So I think it's something that I'm not necessarily saying that everybody goes into, you know, their college or their football team going, I'm going to hit the portal. But I feel like when you do, it's a chance to get courted like you've ever been courted before.
It is.
And that feels good.
Absolutely. Yeah. It feels good. Also, I just think that at that age, just out of high school, you're still not ready for that yet.
Okay.
You're not ready. There's a reason that they don't let people go from high school to the NFL. You're not ready for it yet. And I think that a little bit of 4 years of discipline and 4 years of learning some more lessons before you're there, because it's a lot of them you're going to, everybody's going to see a lot of them are not going to turn out well. And go look at go watch the Johnny Manziel documentary.
Oh no, I heard that's depressing.
It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen.
Is it really?
His honesty is what makes it. Like, he's completely honest and tells you everything that was going on.
He didn't give a fuck, did he?
No, and he tells you that he wasn't going to practice. Like, you know, and people, I could see in the games, you know, I got in arguments with quite a few people. I was like, he is not going to be a good pro. I can see Mike Evans is bailing him out.
Yes.
At Texas A&M. Every throw, I like the throws at Mike Evans' feet and he catches it. The throws over his head and he catches it. That's not going to work for him in the pros. Like, I can tell his mechanics are off. He doesn't look great. He's just a talented athlete. He never converted it to skill, and he pretty much admits that.
Could he have, though? Do you think he could?
Yeah, he would have worked at it. It takes work. You have, yeah, he has the arm. He had the speed. He could have been as good as Russell Wilson. But Russell Wilson worked at it. Russell Wilson put in the effort. You even talk about, everybody's like Kobe Bryant, you know, he's LeBron and Michael Jordan, all three of those guys. People are like, oh, they're the most talented ever. Go look at how much work those guys put in away from the court, away from everybody else. Especially, I don't know about LeBron. I'm sure it's the case, but I know for sure, I've seen it, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant.
Oh, Kobe, the sorcerer.
They worked 5-6 hours a day on their own in their own gym. That's why they were so good. It was their level of dedication. Yes, they're talented, but when you get to the NFL, and even when you get to like big-time SEC college football, there's a bunch of guys that are at your talent level. It's who is going to work and who is going to convert it to skill, and that's why Nick Saban is the greatest coach ever in college football. He tells these guys, enjoy the process. Nobody's job is guaranteed. Enjoy the process. And he makes them work to convert it into a skill. And that's the difference. If you rely on talent, your talent's going to let you down. When you convert it to skill, like Nick Saban does with his players, that's when it's going to serve
you
well.
This is a fucking smart guy. Now, you just mentioned FSU. What did you think, when, you know, mixing with politics when, I don't know who the hell else, was Ashley Moody or was it Rick Scott? And they're going, we want answers. I mean, I think even FSU fans were embarrassed. Like, what? How bad of a look was that your tax dollars are going to people? I know there's money on the line when you go to the playoffs and everything, but they were taking out time to try to get FSU in when it was already a moot point.
Yeah, I even saw some like hardcore conservatives that would support them saying, we have a home insurance crisis in Florida.
Yes.
I think that you should maybe be worried about that and not college football.
It's just crazy what people will latch on to try to, you know, placate
for politics.
Yeah.
Listen, it's not going to make a difference in our lives one bit if FSU gets into the playoffs or not. But how much you pay for insurance on your house and property taxes, that's going to matter.
Yeah. I'm fucking poor, Rick Scott, okay? Help us out over here. I want to get your opinion on two more pop culture figures, man, and then I'll let you out of here and go do your mysterious job that you're up to. tell me what you think about the Vince McMahon stuff that came out.
So, Vince McMahon, much like Michael Jackson and Donald Trump and some people I've been around, is what you'd call in psychology a narcissistic psychopath. He's a megalomaniac. He's a malignant narcissist. And
does that something that like snowballs, or you can get worse as you get older?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You absolutely get worse as you get older.
Because this was some sick shit, Brent.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. And Vince, I've heard the rumors for years about Vince. I've had probably one of my best friends in the whole entire world that's ever lived is Test. And I'm still like, he passed in 2009, and I'm still not over it. Like I loved him like family. And
he was from Lutz, right?
He was from Toronto.
Toronto. Okay.
He was from Toronto. And you know, I was friends with Edge and Christian and Jericho and all these guys. And we used to all go hang and stuff like that. But, Vince did not treat them very well. And anything that Vince does is about Vince, because again, he is a megalomaniac. Now, Stephanie is wonderful. And the company,
she looks like it too.
And the company has done so well because Stephanie and Triple H, I got to give him Hunter credit as well. The two of them have done very well. Vince McMahon, for a long time, was great at running WWE, but he is consumed now with his own ego and his own needs and whatever he feels like doing. And I think it's a huge problem. This is the second time that he's resigned, but I think this one's going to be pretty contentious.
Because you are a smart guy. Like, how do you get to the point, Brent, where you are? I mean, I read some of the text messages. He's talking all kinds of nasty shit. Apparently, was certain days she was supposed to hook up with other guys in the office, and he would have her. Then allegedly, you know, he offered her up to Brock Lesnar, and she sent him these videos of her urinating. Like, how do you get to the point now? I know he's in his like 70s. You're running. You just had this huge merger. Like everything, nothing is going better for you than right now. How do you get to the point where you're consumed with sex and power?
That tells you everything you need to know about that personality disorder, because it's all about feeding his ego. And that's all that people that are megalomaniacs are capable of, is feeding and protecting their own ego. That's it. That's part of the having power over somebody like that is part of that personality disorder. And the one thing that you can predict with a megalomaniac. Now, lots of people are narcissists. That's different than in this level of being a megalomaniac. Like I said, Michael Jackson, Donald Trump, Vince McMahon, those are the cases that I can, MJ Kelly, those are the ones that I can, those are the ones that I can point to. But what you can always predict is they're going to crash and burn. The only question is how much damage are they going to do all the way down? And look at all of them. Vince McMahon, look, January 6th.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson. They always crash and burn. always. But you just don't know how much damage they're going to do and to who on their way down. And that's what you can always predict with those people.
Man, I'm glad I got your opinion on it. That was good. All right, one last thing here, because everybody hates us right now, but I'm dying to see what you think. Do you have an unnecessary hatred towards Taylor Swift?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay. It's a very hot topic right now. I mean, people want her off the fucking TV. I don't know why. They're not watching
football.
But that's
not her fault.
No, it's not. But
it's not her fault. She has the right to go to the game and support her boyfriend. The TV putting her on, that's their fault, focusing on her. That's not her fault. And, you know, she's to a level of fame that would literally make me puke. I would not want to be where she is.
I mean, probably the biggest star in the world, would you say?
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
I know people say the football, a couple of football players are up there, but I mean, I don't.
Taylor's, I mean, you'd have to know soccer.
Yeah, Ronaldo. I don't know. I don't know.
Like, I know. But I'm a soccer fan.
Yeah.
But Taylor Swift, biggest star in the world, most recognizable. So also, she's going to get this kind of weird heat. But she has the right to be there and to support her boyfriend. And like, why not? And the media is who's to blame for putting her on. She's not asking to be on camera in the private box. She's there with friends and family.
People are acting like she's running on the field, you know, like that Andy Reid got her to be the new kicker or something like that.
I did think it was cool of Kelsey's brother, Jason Kelsey, to pick up a young girl fan and bring her up to the booth to say hi to Taylor Swift. And Taylor Swift was gracious and talked to this girl.
I met Taylor a couple of times.
Oh, awesome.
So for my wife being top 40 when we worked over at Cox, she was at Hot 115. So met Taylor Swift, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago as a group. It was a meet and greet like I haven't experienced before, Brent, because, you know, when you go in, the band's sitting at a table, they sign your shit. You're standing in a room. She walks in, you know, and she's talking to you like, you know, we're talking right here. So she walks up to me and she's like, oh, you look cool. Now that's something she does. That's something where she goes and she meets somebody and she picks out something on them and she talks about it. She's programmed. She knows how to like make you feel seen. So I did that. Then we saw her at Ray J, you know, a few years later, not this past time, but when she was still able to meet people. And because remember, her and Travis Kelce got together because Kelce wanted to meet her and she wasn't meeting anybody before shows. And then she found out this hot football player wanted her. So yeah, I met her, you talk to her, like, and she makes you feel seen. She makes you feel like you're the only person in the room, and that's why she's a superstar.
Yeah. And look, more probably, like, listen, I congratulate people on their success. I don't hate on it. Like, it's great. If, you know, she had a dream, obviously, to get to this level, and she made it. And again, she worked hard at it. She got there. People don't see the work that she's put in behind the scenes.
Strawberry Festival 09, people. She played the fucking Strawberry Festival in 09.
And there's like those old videos, like she's standing there, there's like three people. She's got a guitar sitting around there playing. Yeah. Like, hey, she put in the work, she paid her dues, and she's wildly successful. I'm not going to hate on her for that.
But you are right. Adding Jason Kelce into the mix now that the Eagles are done and seeing him at the games. And yeah, when they were at the game in Buffalo and he brought that girl up to Taylor, I mean, and obviously his wife was very embarrassed by the whole thing, but they all seem like they're great people. You know, I don't know in 30 years if we're going to see, you know, Vince McMahon type text messages from Travis or Jason Kelce at all. I sure fucking hope
probably
not.
Probably not.
I mean, I'm sure we're going to see those from Antonio Brown anytime soon, but like, definitely not those guys.
So he's a guy... I think he's even beyond, I think that he's got some level of schizophrenia. I think that
it's past CTE, you think?
I think that CTE exacerbates it for sure. But I think that he's got an actual, because narcissism doesn't mean you're insane. It means you have a personality disorder. I think that he has some mental illness, Antonio Brown.
God, yeah.
And I think that the NFL didn't do him any favors by keeping him to put him on the field and not getting him to a doctor, because he really needs some psychiatric.
Brent, he's a fucking mess. I know you're not on Twitter or anything, man, but he is. I mean, he tweets out shit. He's still talking shit about Tom Brady almost every day. I mean, it's just, it's
mentally ill.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, knowing at least what we know, that Tom, you know, stepped out multiple times to bring Antonio Brown to New England, to bring Antonio Brown to Tampa, and then he turns around and starts trashing the guy. I mean, publicly too. It's just crazy. But
it's like when Gruden was coaching the Raiders and called him to try to get him to come back to practice. He plays Gruden's phone call like Gruden, like it was something bad. Gruden's like, hey, man, you're a great football player. Why don't you just come in and play football? I was like, bro, that doesn't make Gruden look bad.
Yeah.
Gruden's making sense on the phone.
He is. I hope that he gets some help or goes away. I hope.
He really does need psychiatric help. He does. He's out of control, and I just don't want to see him hurt himself or hurt somebody else. That would be horrible.
Antonio, listen to Brent, okay? He's giving you some messages.
Hey, look, there comes time where we all need help.
Yeah.
Mental health.
Absolutely.
I think that in this country, we need to stop with the stigma around going to see a doctor for your mental health. Just it's they're injuries that you don't see.
What about the stigma of taking medication?
I don't think there should be any stigma to your mental health at all. Now, some of the psychotropic drugs, like, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. I mean, I just see the side effects on the commercials on TV, and it doesn't look great.
I'm on a couple of them,
but you're doing it with a doctor, and you're seeing a doctor, and I think that it's good that at least you're going to see a doctor about it. You know, I get my health care at the VA, and I didn't know what to think at first because I'd heard horror stories, but a combination of presidents, Barack Obama and Donald Trump, have made the VA like the best healthcare experience I've ever had.
Awesome.
They you know how they get paid? They get paid based on our reviews of how satisfied we are. That's how they get their bonuses. They get their bonuses on their number of star reviews from the patients. And the when I say it's different is when I see the doctor there, he makes decisions based on what's good for me, not what the insurance company will approve. And not a drug that he's trying to push. So there at the VA, I don't get drugs pushed on me. I get...
They're really looking out for you.
I get, okay, we're putting you into a wellness program, an exercise wellness program. We're putting you here. Here's a dietary program. Here's somebody that you can talk to about nutrition and medications and how to manage pain without pain pills. It's all been just a wonderful experience, and I'm more healthy than ever, and I just wish more people could have this experience.
Does the VA frown upon marijuana use?
They do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they do, but the doctors themselves will tell you, listen, I can't tell you to do it, but I really don't have a problem if that's, you know, because I told them, you know, I'm honest with my doctor, you know, I use, you know, THC and psilocybin to manage my PTSD and my stress,
yeah,
and it works well for me. He's like, well, I can't condone it, but...
Good.
He gives a little nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Like at the VA, we can't tell you to do that, but.
All right, good.
But psychedelics are not addictive, and they don't form that physical addiction, and it helps calm the stress.
All right, one more question. You talked about, like, you know, wellness and stuff like that, and health and exercise. Did you get pushed in that direction from your doctor? Because, I mean, you look great. Are you on? I mean, what are you doing?
I decided to do. So in 2023, so I spent the whole year just transforming. I was overweight. I was not eating healthy.
So I'm worried. I'm kind of right there.
I was drinking too much, all that stuff. And I pretty much, you know, on occasion I drink, but pretty much I don't drink. And I'm eating more healthy. I had been exercising quite a bit. And I'm getting back to it. I had a small injury from exercising that I'm over now. But
dude, I'm telling you, man, I mean, people can't see us. You look good, man. Like, you look youthful. Like, you don't look
like
you
feel better.
You don't look like you've aged at all. It's just, I mean, yeah, and you feel better. That's the best part.
I feel better. I feel healthy mentally and physically. I really, really do. And life's good. And I look back on my career in radio, like, with extreme fondness.
All right, this just because I've been looking at your nails for this whole time. Now, Cole Beasley, a former wide receiver of the Bills, tweeted out the other day, what's up with guys painting their fingernails? Caleb Williams, quarterback of USC, had his fingernails painted. Now people think he's going to be a bust because he painted his fingernails. Can you just tell us why you do it? I have no issue with it at all.
Oh, I know you don't.
Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. Looks cool.
It's that simple. No, I personally like it. Like, that's where I'm at now, is I'm doing things for me that I personally like, and... That's just like the same reason I get tattoos. I like it.
Yeah, just put some... Guys, yeah. It's black, okay? It doesn't have bright red or anything like that. What should my Bears do at number one? Trade the pick?
So, no. Here's what they should do. Oh. They should trade Justin Fields.
Oh, man.
And pick the quarterback from LSU. That guy...
Jaden Daniels?
That guy is unbelievable. He's Did you watch any of his full games?
Oh, yeah, but...
He's unbelievable. Like, he has... One slight move and makes a defender.
You think
miss.
He's a surefire can't miss?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
More so than Caleb Williams.
Way more so than Caleb Williams. You look at their game tape.
Okay, so, I mean, you would
And look at the defenses they're playing against and look at their game tape.
Well, so Caleb would go number one overall. They wouldn't have to draft. I mean, they could trade down and probably still get him if
they
want to.
That would be a good idea. But what I always believe in doing and what I want the Saints to do every year, and this is something that Bill Belichick believes in, offensive and defensive line is top priority.
Yes.
Because you can have above average to good players in the skill positions, but if you have a top-notch offensive defensive line, you're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, there was a year for a while there where the Saints were drafting like Sheldon Rankins, and I mean, they were drafting...
They're gonna have to take an offensive lineman.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's a Peyton Turner. I know he didn't necessarily work out, but I mean, Sean Payton was all about, you know, beefing up those lines. And I mean, you thought it was all about Drew Brees and, you know, Alvin Kamara and Marquise Colston back in the day, but you know, they had solid line play. And I've seen that. That's why I think the Bears should trade down, get an offensive lineman, get a wide receiver, and you know, try to bulk up that offense for either Fields or a quarterback coming in.
But that's the thing, is I think that would be the best thing to do, is if you can trade down and get the number one tackle.
Yes.
That helps your team immensely, because offensive linemen and defensive linemen, for the most part, if that high of a level, can play right off the bat. Quarterback takes time. Receivers year one, can they're hit or miss, but
yes,
they could. But mostly rookie receivers are going to contribute a little bit, not a lot. Rookie running backs can play, but they're short lived. They're going to be 4 or 5 years. Offensive linemen, man, you need offensive and defensive linemen, because football is about two things. It always has been and always will be: blocking and tackling.
And it's not sexy, people. We know you get an offensive lineman, you can't put him on your fantasy team, you're not going to get his jersey, but you got to have two big motherfucking book, you know, guys on the bookend. You got to have some guys, you know, up the middle and all that stuff. And, you know, as I'm getting older and a football fan, I can see that. So load me up with some lines. Brent, you got anything to promote, man? I know you're doing...
Just Caitlin Hatley, K-A-T-E-L-Y-N, Hatley, H-A-T-L-E-Y.com. One-stop shopping there for all her stuff. She's got it really... she's got her website tightened up. She actually did that all herself, too.
Really?
Her website's tightened up. Everything's ready, good to go. So go to CaitlinHatley.com. You can click on any of her links there, and you can even message her. She'll get back to you.
Brent, dude, I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Awesome. Have a great day, Seth.
You too, man.